All right, so let's jump into this deep dive. We're looking at Fleming v. Nestor, a Supreme Court case, and you know, a case that just grapples with some really fundamental questions about government benefits, individual rights, and yeah, really makes you think.
Yeah, it's a really interesting one, and it goes way back to 1960. This case, so we're kind of going back in time a little bit, but it it still has some surprising relevance for today, I think, in how we think about the role of government, and how secure are these programs that we rely on or might rely on in the future.
Right. And, it's kind of a long and winding road. So for me, can you kind of set the stage? Like, who is this Nestor guy, and what happened that landed him in front of the Supreme Court?
Sure. So at the center of this whole thing, you have Ephraim Nestor. He was an immigrant, came from Bulgaria, arrived in the U.S. back in 1913.
Okay.
And worked here for close to two decades, yeah, contributing to the Social Security system from 1936 up until 1955. And then in November 1955, he actually started receiving old age benefits, kind of like what you'd expect after paying in for all that time.
Right, right.
But then here's where things get kind of interesting. In July 1956, Nestor was deported. And the reason for the deportation was his past membership in the Communist Party.
Mm.
And this membership, it lasted from 1933 to 1939. So, quite a while back.
So wait, he gets deported for something that happened, like two decades earlier?
Yeah, that's right. It was quite a while ago.
And, especially when he's already receiving these benefits, it's kind of like, is that fair?
Yeah, it definitely raises some eyebrows, right? And, the impact for Nestor was pretty immediate. His Social Security benefits were terminated.
Okay.
And there was a specific legal basis for this. It wasn't just arbitrary.
Right.
It was based on Section 202N of the Social Security Act. And this section basically said that benefits could be cut off for someone who was deported under certain sections of the Immigration and Nationality Act.
Okay, so to recap for our listeners, Nestor pays into Social Security for almost 20 years, starts getting those benefits, then gets deported for past political activity, and boom, his benefits are gone.
It's it in a nutshell, yeah.
That's a huge deal, right? I mean, that was like his financial security.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, I mean, was that even legal? Like, did the government actually have the right to do that?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And that's what this whole case boils down to. Did taking away his benefits violate his constitutional rights somehow?
Right, right.
So Nestor, he wasn't just going to take this lying down. He challenged this decision in federal district court.
Okay.
And what's really interesting is that the initial ruling actually went in his favor.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the lower court basically said that cutting off his benefits was like taking away his property without due process.
Okay.
They saw those benefits as something he had earned, like you would own a house.
Right.
And taking those away would be unconstitutional.
So round one, Nestor wins. The court agrees with him.
Yeah, it looked that way at first.
But this is a Supreme Court we're talking about, so there's got to be more to the story.
Oh, yeah. There's definitely more to it. The story doesn't end there.
Okay.
The Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare at the time, they weren't happy with this decision, so they appealed it. Went straight to the Supreme Court.
Okay.
And the Supreme Court, well, they reversed the lower court's ruling.
So ultimately, Nestor loses.
Yeah. In the end, the Supreme Court said it was constitutional to terminate his benefits.
Okay. So what was it? What was the Supreme Court's reasoning here?
Well, the majority opinion written by Justice Harlan really focused on this one key distinction. They said that Social Security benefits, they're not what they called an accrued property. Right.
Okay.
It's not like owning a house or having a contract where you're guaranteed something specific.
Right.
Instead, they saw Social Security more as a social insurance program.
Yeah.
Something designed for the general welfare. And because of that, they said Congress had the power to adjust it as needed.
Mm-hmm. So less like your own personal piggy bank and more like a shared safety net that the government can manage.
Exactly. That's a good way to put it.
But, it still feels kind of counterintuitive, right? Because people do pay into it with the expectation of getting something back later on.
Yeah, and that's a totally fair point. I think that's where a lot of people get tripped up. But, the court looked at the original Social Security Act, and there was this clause in there that explicitly gave Congress the power to change any part of the act.
Hmm.
So they basically said, look, Congress never meant to make these benefits completely untouchable. They wanted the flexibility to, adapt the program if things changed in society.
Okay, so because Congress put that clause in there, they can pretty much change the rules whenever they want, even if it affects people who have been paying up for years.
That's the gist of it, yeah. And since they didn't see it as a fundamental property right, they applied what's called the rational basis test to the law, and that's a much lower bar for Congress to clear.
Okay, for our listeners who might not be legal experts, what exactly does rational basis mean in this case?
So the rational basis test, it's basically the easiest test the courts use when they're deciding if a law is constitutional.
Yeah, okay.
And all it really asks is there any conceivable reason for this law to exist? It gives a ton of leeway to Congress. They don't have to have the best reason, just a possible one.
And how did that play out in Nestor's situation?
So the court looked at Section 202, and they basically said, yeah, this makes sense. They figured that Congress could reasonably decide that if someone's not living in the U.S. anymore, especially if they were deported for certain reasons, they shouldn't keep getting benefits paid for by U.S. taxpayers.
So they're basically saying that it's rational to assume that if you're not here, you shouldn't be getting the benefits.
Right. And Justice Harlan, he even wrote, and I'm paraphrasing here, but it was basically like, it's not up to us to decide if this is a good or fair decision by Congress. That's Congress's job, not ours.
Right.
So they were pretty hands off about it, letting Congress call the shots.
So they're like, hey, Congress made the rule. We see a possible reason for it. Case closed. But I remember you saying there were some pretty strong dissenting opinions.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Not everyone on the court was on board with this.
Right.
Justices Black, Douglas, and Brennan, they all dissented. And they had some really compelling arguments that I think are important to understand.
Okay.
Justice Black, he was adamant that Social Security benefits are absolutely an accrued properties, right? Something you earn by paying in.
Right.
He saw what happened to Nestor as an unconstitutional taking of that property.
Yeah.
Like the government just confiscating someone's private insurance policy that they paid for.
Wow. Yeah, that's a powerful comparison, especially for Nestor, who put in almost two decades of contributions.
Right. And then you have Justice Douglas. He took it a step further, called Section 202 a bill of attainder, which is a fancy way of saying it's a law that punishes a specific person or group without a trial.
Right.
He argued that this law was punishing Nestor for his past political views without giving him a chance to defend himself in court.
Right.
He pointed out that Nestor's involvement with the Communist Party was actually legal back then.
Yeah.
So in his eyes, Congress was basically acting like judge, jury, and executioner.
It's like Congress stepping outside of its lane and deciding to punish him without any due process.
Exactly. That's the idea.
Okay. And what about Justice Brennan?
Justice Brennan, he was joined by Chief Justice Warren and Justice Douglas in his dissent.
Okay.
And they argued that the law was basically a punishment and an ex post facto law, which means it's punishing someone for something that was legal when they did it.
Gotcha.
Brennan highlighted that being deported after living in the U.S. for 43 years and losing all those Social Security benefits after contributing for 19 years was a really harsh consequence.
Yeah, that's huge.
And he emphasized that what Nestor did back in the 30s wasn't even a deportable offense at the time.
It really is like they changed the rules of the game after he had already finished playing.
Yeah, that's a good way to think about it. And, you know, the dissenting justices, they were concerned about Congress maybe overstepping its boundaries and using these eligibility rules to target groups they didn't like.
That makes sense. It's like, what's to stop them from doing this to other groups down the line, right?
That's exactly what they were worried about. It's the slippery slope. You know, if they could do it to Nestor, who's next?
Exactly. Exactly.
And Justice Brennan, he specifically pointed out that they didn't cut off benefits for all deportees, just the ones they considered morally bad.
Right.
Which made it seem less like a neutral change and more like they were trying to punish certain people.
So it sounds like the main disagreement here is that the majority's like, Congress has the power to manage this program and their rule is reasonable enough. And the dissenters are like, hold on, this is basically taking someone's property, punishing them without a trial, and punishing them for something that wasn't even a crime when they did it. It's like two completely different ways of looking at how individuals and the government should interact, especially when it comes to these social safety net programs.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. It's a fundamental clash of viewpoints. And, you know, it's really important to understand both sides.
Absolutely. So where does this leave us? Like, what's the lasting impact of this case?
Well, for one thing, Fleming v. Nestor really cemented Congress's broad power over things like Social Security.
Okay.
The court saying these benefits aren't untouchable property rights gives Congress a lot of wiggle room to change these programs how they see fit.
So, like, even today when we hear about debates about who should get benefits or whether those benefits should be cut, those debates are probably happening within the framework of this case.
Oh, absolutely. This case is still hugely influential in how we think about government benefits, legally speaking.
Right.
And it really highlights this tension, you know, between letting Congress be flexible with these complex programs and protecting the rights of individuals, especially those who've been paying in for a long time.
You know, it really makes you wonder, should the courts be stepping in more when laws retroactively affect people's benefits, even if those benefits aren't technically contracts?
That's the big question that comes out of this case. Mm-hmm. And the dissenting opinions definitely argue for more scrutiny, especially when it seems like a law is being used to punish certain groups.
Right. Right. So to wrap things up for our listeners today, the Supreme Court in Fleming v. Nestor ultimately sided with the government, saying that Social Security benefits aren't a protected property right in the constitutional sense, and that Congress had a reason for taking away Nestor's benefits after he was deported.
Yeah, that's the key takeaway. But it's crucial to remember those dissenting opinions, too.
Yeah.
You know, they saw it as a punishment, an unconstitutional taking of property, a bill of attainder, and an ex post facto law. And Justice Black's comparison to confiscating your private insurance policy, I think that really drives home their point.
Right. It really highlights this ongoing debate about how much power the government should have over these programs versus how much we should be protecting individual rights, even when it comes to benefits that aren't part of a formal contract.
Yeah, it's a debate that's still going strong today.
So given the ruling in Fleming v. Nestor, what does this mean for future debates about things like who's eligible for Social Security and whether those benefits can be changed?
That's something we all have to think about. You know, what is the nature of these social safety nets and can people rely on them even if there's no formal contract?
It's a big question. It really makes you think.
For sure. You know, the court may have sided with Congress in this case, but those dissenting opinions are powerful. They remind us that this is an ongoing debate about finding that balance between government authority and individual rights.
Absolutely. And it's a debate that we all have a stake in.
For sure.
Well, this has been a really insightful deep dive. Thanks for joining me today.
Glad to be here. It's a fascinating case, and I hope it's given everyone some food for thought.
Absolutely.
You know, that's something we all need to be aware of.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Thanks again.
My pleasure. Anytime.
Okay. Take care.
You too.